One of the things that I learned early on from one of my teachers is you can't be everything to everyone. And I think a lot of times we naturally as humans are people pleasers.
Yeah.
We're growing up in a society where we try to be as amicable to everyone. So, oh, you want me to be a bit quieter? I'll be quieter. Oh, you want me to be a bit louder? I'll be a bit louder. You want to be a bit more fun? I'll be a bit more fun. Oh, you should have more people. Here's a band. Oh, you want less people? Oh, just me. And we keep shifting our needle to try find north on the compass when I think there's a beautiful strength in saying, this is what I believe is my calling to share. And those who gravitate to that will find you.
Hey everyone, welcome back to For Soul's Sake, a podcast in which I aim to give you candid conversations on spirituality and well-being alongside a host of amazing guests. Thank you all so much for coming back to listen, learn, and grow with us. Now, you know I love bringing on people to the podcast who make spirituality, mindfulness, yoga, meditation accessible and relevant for the masses. And today we're joined by someone who I genuinely believe has a sixth sense when it comes to making spirituality, or specifically meditation, really relevant for the masses. He's someone who I admire, I learn from, I grow with, and I'm really honored to have our guest today, Michael James Wong, who's a world-renowned speaker, a yoga teacher and mindfulness practitioner, someone who's committed in expanding the conversation around the mind and mental health in unique and innovative ways. He's especially known for creations such as Just Breathe, an app which shares daily practices, guided meditations, artist collaborations, and more. If that's not enough, he's an author of two wonderful books, a spoken word artist, a host of the podcast The Quiet Life, and Child's Pose. It's already such an accolade-filled introduction, Michael. Michael is committed for sharing his wisdom far and wide through the founding of Krama Yoga School, which focuses on leveling up yoga teachers from a diverse background, providing them with practical tips, guides, and mentoring in yoga practices. Having performed at iconic venues such as the British Museum, Parliament, and TEDx events across the world, Michael continues to make strides within the community, and I'm extremely, extremely honored and grateful to have him here, not only as a dear friend, but someone that I am looking forward to talk all things mindfulness with. Michael, thank you so much for being here, mate.
Thanks for having me. Nice to see you, brother.
Of course. It's an honor and privilege to have you here, but let's get stuck in. All right. So I know that you know a fair amount about yoga and meditation, and that you've kind of spent endless hours trying to make people benefit through relevant content. But what about those that just don't vibe with meditation, that find maybe it's a bit too slow, a bit too, because I mean, there are people out there that just think maybe this is just a lot of woo-woo and that can't connect with that.
I mean, it's a natural thing as human beings to have some level of skepticism on things we're unfamiliar with, things that are new, things that maybe just don't fit the natural rhythm that we're currently existing in. You know? And I think especially for someone like me, I grew up in LA, live here in London now. And so even as a default setting that I had growing up was things need to be fast, things need to be quick, I need to be good at things. And so when we look at things like meditation, mindfulness, all these kind of quieter practices, it goes against the psyche of being good at things quickly. And so naturally, as a human being, what tends to happen is that when we're challenged and when we kind of have to start again like a beginner, or things just don't go at our pace, we tend to resent them. We tend to find them difficult, challenging. We tend to say, oh, they're not for me. But actually, in truth, or at least I think in my truth, in the experiences that I have, a lot of times the things that we need the most aren't the things that we want the most.
Wow. Wow. But how would we convince someone like a corporate, I don't know, a banker, investment banker, someone who his or her life is surrounded with a fast pace, passionate activity, for them to take a moment to breathe, even though they need it? Most of the time they won't even admit that they need it, or won't even be conscious that they need it.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's that is probably one of the most common questions and considerations that's going to be across any of these types of practices in the well-being spaces. How do I convince someone who's against it, or someone who might think it's not for them?
Right.
Or how do I find the right conversation to help show someone that this is valuable? And actually, the way that I see it coming from a teacher's point of view is actually the greatest learning that I've ever had is we shouldn't be trying to convince people. Mm. And actually, a lot of times we think that we need to say to someone, oh, eat your vegetables. Oh, go for a walk. Oh, do a meditation. And if anything that I've learned, and I'm a recently new parent, is that
congrats.
You can't, you know, thank you. You can't teach children, you can't tell children everything.
Right.
Right. And I have nieces and nephews who are around 3 and 5. And a lot of times if you say do this, they run the other way.
Right.
And adults are worse. They run even further. And so one of the best things that we can actually do is just practice that self-embodiment. Mm-hmm. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to take my own practice. I'm going to spend some time stretching, doing some yoga. I'm going to spend my own time reading, being quiet, finding a little moment in my day, you know. And actually what tends to happen is the people around you go, oh, that's interesting. You seem a bit nicer today. Or, ooh, why are you just happy? Nothing's happened. Nothing exciting's happening. And actually what tends to happen is people see the benefit in someone else. Mm. Or they see, you know, the uplift of energy or vitality. And then they go, oh, that's interesting. What have you been up to? Right? The same way as whenever I'm around you, there's a calming, there's a sense of confidence, a sense of knowingness, because I know you have a strong personal practice. I know you spend time in meditation, in mantra. And so if you just spent your whole day going, Michael, come to Kirtan, Michael, come to Kirtan, yeah. Michael, sit with me and do this, I'm going to say, well, actually, I just feel like he's selling me the whole time. And the fact that you never, and I say this with kindness, never overly pushed to invite me or anyone to anything, but then I see so many people going, oh, I'm going to go spend some time with Radhika. Mm. Oh, I'm going to go spend some time in that yoga class or that teacher who practices a lot. And they just enjoy it and they get a lot from it. Mm. And you can tell when someone has a strong personal practice. They walk around and it just, you know, it feels as if it is always within them. Mm. And so I know for me personally, I can gravitate towards those types of people or situations where I know there's a knowingness, a lived experience, as opposed to maybe someone who's just banging on my door, trying to sell me something, show me something, or convince me to come to something.
Yeah.
And we tend to think it's one of those less life lessons you learn as a little kid, kind of saying, you know, when people shout at you or speak loudly towards you, you lean away. But if someone's whispering and enjoying quiet time, people go, oh, can I join you? Yeah. What are you doing?
They feel more comfortable to lean into it when you're just a beacon of light as opposed to someone that's shouting about the light the whole time.
Yeah. And I think, for me at least, that's just has always been my way of leaning into the practice and sharing it, is that if I can just be my most authentic self in the practice, share when asked what I find relevant or beneficial, and share that which has been impactful in my life, it tends to find a beautiful invitation for people to kind of explore it, as opposed to simply say, you should do this. That's when people kind of say, well, now it moves into an intellectual conversation as opposed to an experiential one.
Yeah. People really don't like being prescribed what to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're living that practice, people get attracted to it for sure. Yeah. I totally vibe with that. Was this always a calling for you? Like, you seem like someone who has done a lot of graft to understand the practice and package it in a way that people understand it. Mm. But that takes a lot of time. And I just wonder, like, was it, what called you to kind of, first of all, start practicing yourself and then to share that with others? What was kind of the inspiration, the flame behind it all?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in LA, as I said, and quite naturally, I was introduced to some of these things earlier than most people. When I say earlier, kind of in my teens, you know, kind of in the early 2000s. But it wasn't my natural disposition. I was, you know, a bit of a kid who liked, you know, to be successful, to be cool. I thought it was really interesting. You know, you have this really ambitious mindset growing in LA. And it's very true. And there's still a lot of those qualities within me. And we learn how to evolve from that. But my natural disposition wasn't to be the quiet one in the corner being calm. It was very kind of, you know, this is the gratification I need. This is what's going on. And I had a lot of things about my self-confidence growing up. You know, am I cool enough for this, smart enough for this? Did I look the part? You know, I come from an ethnic background. It's a bit like, where do I fit in? So I was always a high achiever, maybe say partly because of my intellect and also partly because I felt that's how I could prove my place.
Wow.
And so growing up and moving into a place where I was learning about these practices, discovering them, I was very resistant at the beginning, and I was doing them to achieve them. You know, I had friends who said, come to yoga, let's go to a meditation practice. And I was going to prove a point that I could do it, and I could do it just as good as everyone else without having done any before, or I could sit just as long quietly as someone else who was doing it longer than me. And so it was coming from a place of trying to win at the yoga and the meditation, wow, and all these things when you're kind of, you know, 16, 17, 18 year olds, because that's the psyche I had of, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to be best at it.
Right.
And then we know and we learn that, you know, there is no winning in these things. These practices are there just as ways for us to reconnect, to turn inward. And it was actually kind of this unique thing where, because I wanted to be so good at it so early on, there was a level of, let's call it achievement. You know, I learned the technique, I learned a practice, I learned discipline, I had a lot of commitment. And then somehow, some way, you know, sparks flew and things connected, and it evolved into a way of actually being in the practice. And, you know, we always talk about this as teachers, is as you go deeper, you understand more. And as you go deeper, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. Mm. And so actually, I had a lot of moments in my life where actually, you know, I moved to Australia, traveled a lot, and I kind of had some rude awakenings in those earlier years where I lost a job, I moved a country, I lost a relationship, all these things that said, you can't win at this. And so I just kept finding myself back, you know, in a meditation practice, in a yoga class, purely as a way to find a little bit of certainty, safety, comfort, quiet, when everything else was so busy and chaotic. Mm. And I mean, I think a lot of times for me, I have that mixed ambitious background where academically I did quite a lot growing up and through school, and I had jobs in my 20s where I was, let's call it, arguably good at what I was doing, and it was about, how do I strategically figure this out, or how do I make this look good, or how do I promote and work on a project that can really create a connection with people.
That's fascinating. Like, it wasn't clear that this was definitely going to, you were successful in many different other areas. And that's interesting for me to hear, because I think sometimes yoga teachers or meditation teachers or people who are teaching spirituality of any sort will be kind of falling into it by default.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting.
Well, for me, if if you ask my parents, and a lot of times in where I grew up, you do these things when you're kind of a kid that says, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
I was always, you know, lawyer, Supreme Court justice, doctor, you know, highly proficient, arguably traditional careers.
Yeah.
And I, you know, growing up, I had the scholarship to university, and I was the youngest to be on the board of directors at this company. And so I had a lot of that kind of success. And I never in a million years thought I would end up here. And actually, what's been the most beautiful journey is actually it's been really nice to move away from that ambitious side of my personality, to not need to succeed, because part of my ego will always say, if I'm going to do it, I need to be the best at it. And what's great about being in our world in these conversations is, while arguably, you know, I have had relative, you know, success and, you know, awareness and, you know, whatever it is we would call it in this kind of community, that's not the point. You know, it's not about, there's no promotion to the next level here. There's no next job or thing to do. This is, how do we just make more friends, create more opportunities for people? How do we be more of service? But part of that is, again, just been something that's evolved from where I was growing up, but also the influence of all the things in my life that I didn't realize led me here, right? Because I was always in a team sport, and I always had a lot of people who helped me out, and I was always an immigrant living in someone else's country. And so actually, all of those things that weren't part of that linear drive to success or a destination to a prize, those are all the things now that have taken, you know, the clear vision of actually what's important. And so I'm getting to live the family is more important, friends are more important, community is more important, spending time in service is more important, and being able to see the fruits of that success far more than this career path or this ambitious achievement that's come from it.
Wow. I want to kind of dive in a little bit into what you said about maybe your cultural background, because maybe I can empathize. I don't know if the words empathize, sympathize.
It would be empathize.
Empathize.
I'd say, yeah.
I mean. That I feel that there has been there's been some pushback from my family about, you know, how much time I commit to sharing in a non-conventional, job.
Yeah.
It's not something that I think most kids grow up thinking, I want to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think something that has kind of propelled me to be more of a grafter and more willing to put so much more energy in is that background that makes me think I don't want to be seen as a failure. Yeah. Coming from an Asian, South Asian background, that makes me kind of feel that if I wasn't a doctor or a lawyer, I'm going to be bound as a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess part of that generational upbringing has kind of, really pushed me to then say, I'm going to really give this my best shot. Is that something that you relate with?
I think especially, and it's an important conversation within kind of this wellness community, right? You come from a South Asian background. I come from an East Asian background. You know, of course, if you're listening to this audio only, you know, my background is Chinese. And so the truth is yes, you know, we all have societal pressures of being successful in some sort of linear career,
yeah,
but we have cultural pressure. We have aunts and uncles, and we have people who go, I think it was until my sister was about 30 when my dad still thought she was going to law school. And,
right.
And, you know, my sister and I joke, she's like, that ship has sailed a long time ago. And while my parents are very supportive of everything we do, there's still part of that older generation that says, you're only successful if you tick these, you know, it's like the government form, you know, doctor, lawyer, dentist kind of things.
Yeah.
And those are great careers and professions for people. But for me, it was about, okay, not only do we have that cultural expectation, there's also this aspect of being, let's call it non-white in a Western world that comes with that element of success and feeling like you want to belong somewhere. And so we use our intellect, our graft, our dedication to try maybe be seen as equals in some situations because, you know, we are outsiders in a conversation that often is driven by different narratives, right? I think probably in some situations for me, I'm no matter what the description is, no matter how well known I might be in the work that I do, I'm still that Asian teacher from America.
Far out.
And so sometimes, while that's never the point of it, it's a descriptor. And so I know for me, at least, there was always times growing up, and maybe for you, I don't know, definitely for a lot of my friends with different cultural backgrounds, there was always times where you just wanted to fit in. You wanted to have, you know, the majority background. I'm probably yet to find someone who comes from an ethnic background who at some point growing up didn't want to be white, you know?
Right.
Everyone wanted to be white at some point because it made things easier. And obviously now, growing up, it's a huge blessing to have these different cultural perspectives, things that add to all the things that we get to do, but it doesn't mean it hasn't influenced the way that our path has unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I come from a very diverse background. My family's from New Zealand. My family's Chinese. We grew up in the U.S. My partner's French. You know, I have a lot of influences that say, actually, there's a lot of spaces that we can be a part of. But there's a lot of times when actually we are looking to fit in. And so maybe perhaps for me, it's always been within me as an influence to do the work I'm doing, to also then be of service to create spaces where other people don't have those same barriers that I had getting into these conversations.
I feel completely in line and I totally ascribe to what you're saying, because one of the things that I was told very early on when I started sharing kirtan and mantra meditation and bhakti yoga was that you don't have the look.
Yeah.
You know, that you're not, first of all, it was female is preferable almost, because, you know, that's what you see on the Lululemon and that's what you see on the posters, and that's what you see as being the image for yoga. And so first was that I'm in a man's body. Mm-hmm. And the second was that I'm not Western.
Yeah.
And I think there's a combination of things that has helped me to grow my community fast. Is that one is, I think we're living in an age where cultural appropriation, and that's becoming a huge topic. And I think that people are looking for authentic experiences.
Yeah.
And even though I was born and bred in the UK, somehow or the other, by the color of my skin, it makes me more authentic that I'm chanting mantra. And so that's kind of worked to my favor. But I did feel that I had to work double as hard as some of my Western counterparts to try and grow a community. And in one sense, that's worked to my favor. That's really helped. And I don't know whether you also feel the same way, that pressure, I don't know if we call it pressure, but that has, whatever that X factor is kind of, it's not oppression. I don't want to sound like I'm putting, you know, myself down or anything like that. It's more...
It's consideration. It's an extra consideration.
It's an extra consideration. Thank you. That has helped me to, fuel the fire.
But I think now more than ever, I mean, if we think about the way that the wellness world has evolved in the past 20 years, I've been lucky to be around the global community for that time, being in the US, living in Australia, living here in London, but actually my work is taking me everywhere. So I've been lucky enough to be part of a lot of different conversations, both in Europe, in the UK, Southeast Asia, in the US. Mm. And, five years ago and longer, that was absolutely the case. There was an element of, you need to look the part to get the part.
Yeah.
Right. But now it's actually flipped the other way around, where there's, let's call it a return to tradition, a return to an honoring of the perspective.
Yeah.
And I say, it's funny because you say it yourself, like, you're born and bred in London, but you just look the part. And so all of a sudden now you fit the part better than everyone else.
Now the doors are opening.
But and I'm the same way as, okay, well, actually, let's go for the diverse angle. Wink, wink, pause. Oh, that's why I'm here. Right.
Right.
And I'm not saying that is not a consideration, because it is. And I think, a part of me, and I'm sure a part of you at some point, some part in our life, we go, can't that not be a consideration at all?
Right.
But it also, then it becomes, well, actually, everything in this world has elements of consideration.
Mm.
And everything is has an element of control or not within our control. And all of it is about a conversation of perspective. But ultimately, if we know within our hearts that we can be of service and offer something truly valuable, beneficial, meaningful, purposeful, then for me, if that is an opportunity I'm invited to do, if it's a space that I can fill that can be helpful for others, and if we remove the I from any, invitation, and it's simply about how can we be of service, then it doesn't matter who's getting the invitation. I think for me, the only thing that sometimes rubs me a little bit is when there's when the invitation is granted not based on who can be the most of service.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we have these conversations that says we need space for everyone to be included, but we also need those people like you who actually have the capacity to shoulder the responsibility of the great service it is to share these practices.
Mm-hmm.
And you say this very honestly. 5 years ago, you weren't quite ready.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were. Yeah, you're a very modest.
No, I'm being honest. 5 years ago, I wasn't ready, but yeah.
But also 5 years ago, there's part of part of mine and your ego that says, but I'll do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if there's a big thing, I'll do it. But sometimes there's that, it's like anything. You get older, you know a bit more and you learn a bit about how these things work. And it's a bit like, now pushing on a bit in age and having been around a bit longer than, a lot of others in the space, it's kind of saying, how can I be the most helpful? How can I fill the most space to be of service? Or how can I make space for someone else who might never have been offered an opportunity to share? Or how can we just do it together and be even more impactful?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what you said earlier about using the conditioning that we're in, the bodies in which we're in, and okay, fine, it may be more popular now to have a more, someone brown singing mantras, then I'm going to use that in service.
Mm.
There's a principle in the scripture known as yukta vairagya, and that basically means that whatever cards you're dealt in life, in your karma, whatever your cards you're dealt in this particular form, to just use that in higher purpose. And so if being brown is going to open the door and looking the part is going to open the door in a more authentic way, then great, I'm going to do that. And the other thing that you were talking about just now, which was, slipped in my mind, what were you just talking about?
About collaborating with others and being suspicious for them.
Leaders create more leaders. And with time and with getting older, more gray beard hairs, I think that's something I'm learning as well, that legacy and keeping the space open for future generations is as much part of my service now than also keeping space for the current communities that we have. So training people already, and I think that's part of, you know, your wonderful initiative, Karma Yoga School, is, yeah, I guess when you're young, you don't see the benefit in offering your life lessons, your experiences to others, because you think if they know my secrets, then, well, crap, I'm out of a job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, and it is really interesting because, you know, 5-10 years ago was very much like, I'm not going to tell you anything I do. I'm not going to tell you how I teach. I'm not going to tell you what I do to make people laugh. I'm not going to tell you how much I charge for this. I'm not going to tell you who I know at this thing. And I think where that came from was that insecurity that I would no longer be needed or I would no longer be able to be of service. And I think maybe over time, over, you know, the different repetitions of different, you know, events and these kind of things, it's actually just
done the opposite.
It's the opposite, yeah. You know, and I'm more than happy to not be the one having to lead, because we've been able to create a space where someone else has stepped into their seat of leadership, their seat of the teacher, and has something in their perspective that's beautifully unique to offer. And even more now, what I love is the seat of collaboration. Or actually, if we know that we're sharing with a community or an audience, a group of people who maybe are brand new to it,
yeah.
Maybe it is at the earlier stages of their journey, well, you and I together is far more powerful than you and I separately.
Fully.
And even far more powerful than you and I trying to compete for the same invitation, when actually, if you've already invited me, I'm going to say, well, I'm only going to come if he's coming, and then both of us get to go, and actually, we are of ultimate service. And we also get to spend some time together and hang out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an experience I had recently. I just came back from Berlin, and a friend of mine who was part of our community in London has moved back to Berlin, and she's creating a kirtan space there. And I had to really check myself, because initially when she started and she was sharing basically a lot of the things that I speak about in my sessions and my kirtan events, I kind of had to check myself, because I felt immediately, Why don't she have some original content, you know, like...
Threatened.
Yeah, I felt threatened. And that's the honest truth of it. But then when I saw that so many people were benefiting, one, it softened my heart, because it made me feel that the actual service is being done. I feel that the people that were there in Berlin, I can't actually serve them. You know, I'm here in London and I'm, you know, committed to being in London. And that's part of, you know, one of the things that I set as a pillar for... you know, as a foundation pillar for the years to come, that I want to try and serve in this place. And so one, I couldn't physically be there. And two, I really felt that people were transforming because of the teachings, regardless of me.
Yeah.
And seeing the bigger picture of, you know, there's no certainty on how much time I'm going to live. 86,400 seconds is a number that you get every single day. And there's no guarantee I'm going to get the same tomorrow or a year from now. You know, who knows when time is going to be up, morose point. But
it is one of those things as well that, you know, most, you know, they always say like imitation is the greatest form of flattery. And even that in itself has a little bit of a jarring nature to a lot of people.
For sure.
But even in that sense, you know, that person going off and doing that thing, and for most people who go off and start to create something inspired by, I tend to think and believe that they're holding you and your teaching and your work and what you've done and the community you've built as sacred within
them.
Yeah, and
definitely.
They see you as a source of inspiration. And
which is bewildering.
Which, no, not at all. And I think you're far too humble for that sense of flattery, but it is that sense of some people. And I know this for me early on. It's like when you're stepping out on your own, there is a safe haven in your teachers and your other community leaders to say, this is what I can understand will be of service. This is what I know works. This is what I know has worked for me, so let me share that. And, you know, and for me growing up, or, you know, 10, 20 years ago, I would be inspired by my teachers very closely, to the point where you're like, oh, you're just a little Annie, or you're just a baby whoever.
Uh-huh.
And actually, this is me finding my wings to fly, knowing that I'm so empowered by what I've experienced that I'm going to use that to share. And in time that we find, actually, we have more things to offer and places to build from. And I would guarantee that this person, give it a year or two, will have all kinds of their own things because they've felt safe enough to be able to share what they have been inspired by so far.
Yeah. And what's even further is that they've then further invite me to come back and to share as their teacher. And that's actually quite beautiful to know that there's a lineage of teachers that are coming through that are sharing the same practice.
Yeah. And I think these days, because there is a lot of invitation and events and festivals and all the millions of things out there in the wellness space that didn't exist 5, 10, 20 years ago, or at least in this dynamic of how vast quantity.
Yeah.
There is this element that there seems to be so many opportunities out there that we think we can or should grasp onto. There's a lot of we need to get there or be there or do this. And if I'm honest, I chased a lot of that early on. I said, I need to be at all the festivals. I want to be invited to all the events. I want to teach at this studio, or I want to do these things, because that was how my ego was stroked to say I was doing a good job.
Right.
And that I was doing something meaningful, as opposed to someone who actually comes up to you and says, do you know what? That was actually really, you know, beautiful, really helpful for me. That made me feel this way. I might not have listened to that as much as someone saying, oh, come to this thing, or oh, come to that thing. And so over the years, I've really seen the evolution of one of the teachings that I've been teaching, a principle that I always share early on in trainings is, as teachers or as people in this practice, as people arguably leading in some capacity, we need to lean into community over opportunity. Community over opportunity, because through that, we're really embodying that sense of support and belonging. And from that, many things will happen, right? Many things, you know, will come about. But if we're going for the opportunity, we tend to lead with the ego and leave behind the service.
I mean, this conversation, if I'm honest, I learned so much from you. Like, I genuinely look up to you as someone that is paving the way for, people who are trying to find their niche in sharing. And my God, that's a deep point. I think those of you that are listening to this, rewind it like a minute and re-listen to that. That was flipping deep. Community over opportunity. I want to move on to another topic, Boys of Yoga.
Yeah.
You know, you created a collective of men who are sharing yoga, and what would you say to men that are desirous of trying yoga in a predominantly, I think it's changing, but it's still predominantly a female scene?
Sure. I mean, it's changing quite rapidly.
Yeah.
And that project started back in 2015, and that was purely off personal experience. I grew up in LA, I grew up in Australia. When I was doing a lot of yoga, practicing, you know, the communities there in the wellness space are further ahead than other places in the world.
Yeah.
Maybe because they've got beaches and sunshine, who knows?
That's interesting.
Right? And, yoga, meditation cultures from a Western point of view tend to have grown out of places where there's surf culture, beach, let's call it a calmer way of living. You know, these places where there's a huge influence of enjoyment. And I'm not saying we don't find that in London, and you don't find that in lots of places in Europe, but I do remember when I moved to Australia, like in 2007 or something, and I was working at a job in an office, and it was like day two on a Tuesday, and my boss had walked in, and she's like, oh, what are you doing this evening? And it was like 5 o'clock, and I was like sitting there trying to type away, trying to pretend like I was really trying to be good at this job, still trying to figure it out. And I said, I'm probably going to go home, go to the gym, watch some TV, go to bed. Typical Tuesday, right? I said, what are you doing? And she goes, I'm going scuba diving.
Okay.
And I said, that's not a thing, is it?
Yeah.
She's like, me and all my friends go scuba diving. I'm like, you know it's Tuesday. She's like, I'm going to go scuba diving tonight. And then I'll see you tomorrow. And so it was one of those things that straight away, culturally, in a lot of places around the world, like Australia and LA, there's a cultural appreciation of enjoying life, right? And I would still, to this day, remember that moment where it was literally, who goes scuba diving on a Tuesday? If you said that to someone in London, their brains would explode and they'd just think, that's not a thing.
They're probably lying, isn't it?
And so for me, I was around those communities where it was very welcoming, very enjoyment. I'd go to yoga classes and there was men and women and it was fun. And then we had these kind of, it became social and interactive. And so then as I moved away and moved to Australia and then moved to London, when I came to London, this was, you know, 10, 11 years ago. And it's not what you see here now. It's right. Not brands and studios and festivals and pop culture, main culture. Every event out there has yoga or
meditation,
yeah. Kirtan. And it was me personally finding a set of friends. It was creating a community where I felt a belonging.
Right.
Because then, you know, I was still the only one of the few guys in the room practicing yoga and one of a few guys teaching it. And so the project initially started, who else in London teaches and shares?
Mm-hmm.
Who else in London teaches and shares yoga meditation? Oh, well, I'm going to Berlin next weekend. Who else is there? Oh, I'm happening to be going to Iceland. You know, who else is there? Oh, I happen to be going to Bulgaria. Who else is there? And I actually have just made it a thing where I essentially just documented my travels, meeting a lot of people from the same like-minded community. And it was great because it was one of those things. And one of my best friends now, his name's Dustin Brown. You know, he's from Hawaii, lives in Australia. He was a pro surfer, black belt jiu-jitsu, owns three of the biggest yoga studios, meditation studios in Melbourne, nicest guy in the world, but walking down the street, you wouldn't know it. Wow. And it was, how do I, rather than try to convince people to do these practices, how can I just show what already exists? Mm-hmm. Because as you said earlier, it wasn't in the media, it wasn't in a magazine, it wasn't before Instagram, mm-hmm. It was just... or maybe around when Instagram started, but it was one of these things. How can I, you know, I have the capacity to be able to share a lot of stories and people that I know have met in this practice, and how can we use that as a way to invite people to just see the community as opposed to try to tell someone, you should do yoga, this is good for you. Because, you know, everyone's got a dad, a brother, a cousin, a boyfriend, a friend
yeah.
who probably should
Yeah.
do yoga, meditation, chant, all these types of things. But if you tell them to do it, then they just pull further away rather yeah. than, oh, well, you know, you like to go to the beach and surf. Well, here's a guy that does all that. And you know what he does to be better at surfing and enjoy his time on the beach? He does a bit of yoga. And all these stories. It was a storytelling project.
Yeah.
And through those stories, not only was it amazing to see so many more people come out of the woodwork, you know, because of the visibility of being able to say, here's a great community of people who actually practice and are inspiring to others, but it also became a talking point for a lot of people to share with their families and friends. Mm. You know, it was so unique for me to see so many messages from women who said, I actually showed the project to my brother, to my husband, to my dad, and they actually then came with me to a class.
I love
they came
it.
With me and tried a meditation because they could see a little bit of themselves in it.
Mm.
And it was always about that project. And now all of our projects, it's about how do we open the door for people to come in, right? And how do we open as many doors as possible? Because all things in our space, once you're inside, the practice does the work.
Yeah.
I just need to get you in the building. So if that says, hey, come in the building because we're going to do this and then go for a surf, or come into the building because this and then we're going to have a meal together. Once you're in the building...
Done.
And, you know, I know I always will bring people to Kirtan with you who've never done it, and they leave having the best time of their life because you and the practice does the work. I just need to get you in the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess one thing I wanted to get your insight on is because, I think you've got what many would call a sixth sense when it comes to how to or what's going to be the next kind of thing that's going to kick off in brand spaces, and I guess specifically when it comes to foresight with the yoga scene, where do you see it going? Like, what's kind of your vision of the future?
That's a good question. I mean, it's hard to know whatever's going to come next. I know from my own personal experience, I've had a lot of experiences at the festivals and the studios,
yeah.
and I'm also, for me, a lot of it isn't just guessing what might happen. I am also lucky where I'm probably privy to a lot of conversations that aren't
public.
You know, I have a lot of friends who own studios and run festivals and help to kind of steer and navigate some of the conversations of how can we be better or how can we be more inclusive. And so for me, what I would love to see going forward, rather than maybe guessing the future, what I'd love to see going forward is, how do we make these spaces more inclusive? How do we make these spaces more diverse? Not just in the people of the yellows and the browns and the minorities, but how do we make the practices more inclusive and diverse? How is it not just vinyasa yoga and, you know, one practice of meditation? How do we bring in kirtan not as the party trick or the bonus thing?
A chance to just dance and karaoke.
Yeah, and you do that so eloquently, where you address that is, if you need to just dance and make this a karaoke space,
and do that.
Then do that. But actually, what it is how do we bring this into a conversation that says this is meaningful? Even if you've never heard it, have never tried it, doesn't mean it's not powerful and purposeful and valuable. And I think a lot of times in the past years, we've always felt like we should offer, or I felt that the offerings were safely in the space where people were comfortable, like go for a run, then we'll do some yoga.
Yeah.
Or come for a brunch and then we'll do some meditation. It became, they became safe spaces of easy access.
Mm.
But I do think where I'd like to see things go is where practices and experience are offered, saying this is the thing. You don't need to come knowing everything.
Yeah.
You don't need to come with the expectations.
Yeah.
Just come willing to try. And one of the principles that I will always teach from is, whenever I'm working with teachers who are developing into the space of a teacher, or leveling up or doing more into their depth of teaching, is don't try to be good. Just try.
Just try.
And for teachers who are out there offering something, you know, and they see people like you and people like me going, well, how has Radhika figured it all out? Or how does he have such a community that's so, you know, enticed by being at all the events? And one of the things that I learned early on from one of my teachers is you can't be everything to everyone. And I think a lot of times we naturally as humans are people pleasers.
Yeah.
We're growing up in a society where we try to be as amicable to everyone. So, oh, you want me a bit quieter? I'll be quieter. Oh, you want me a bit louder? I'll be a bit louder. You want me a bit more fun? I'll be a bit more fun. Oh, you should have more people. Here's a band. Oh, you want less people? Oh, it's just me. And we keep shifting our needle to try find north on the compass, when I think there's a beautiful strength in saying, this is what I believe is my calling to share. And those who gravitate to that will find you.
Mm.
And those who don't, it's not like they don't like you. It's just it means that they might want to face a different direction, and that's okay. And it doesn't mean the wind doesn't blow back towards you in a year or two, or maybe blows onwards to someone else who does another practice. It's great.
Wow.
You know, as teachers, we can't feel any ownership in those who come to sit with us. It's really about, how can I just be of service and offer what I believe is my authentic way of sharing these practices or what I have to say? And if it is valuable to anyone, great. Love to have you here. And if it's not, I got some people I think you'd be great to go enjoy some time with. Go see Radhika. Go to see this person.
Go see
that person.
Right. Wow. Such a vision for the future. That's beautiful. Yeah.
Well, what about you? Where do you see things going?
I think I see things going in a more integrated. It's already happening. We're seeing exactly what you said, like go to brunch and then go to a yoga session, or, you know, let's go for a run and then maybe go and do a meditation class. And I can see that happening more and more. I can see the integration happening in society more and more.
Mm.
I think we're going to see a duality of things happening. I mean, I don't want to sound like a fortune teller, but the way I see it is, it's going to be both that it's going to be more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think that we're probably going to see a lot of watering down of practicing practices, and, you know, things being, less authentic in one sense. And so I can see the positives and negatives. I think that's natural. I think that's going to happen in any sphere. So we're seeing a boom in one sense of this kind of awakening of society, and we're seeing Russell Brand really growing in his ability to capture audiences who want to speak more about consciousness and spirituality and meditation. But I think that comes at the cost of the authentic nature of what he's sharing and where it actually comes from being lost.
Sure.
And I think that that itself can be seen as a negative, or it can also be seen as a positive, that we're reclaiming teachings which are universal.
Yeah, and I think it's important, though. Excuse me. I think it's important, though, is that especially for hopefully people like you and I who come from maybe the authentic tradition of learning is yeah. that to see people like that not as conflict or adversary or it's more about I think it's everyone has a role
yeah.
to play. Everyone exactly. is doing, you know, it's about like everyone has a job in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Right. If we're all making the meal, you know, someone's got to be at the front. You know, you go traveling, you kind of go to I was just in Portugal last week, and there's yeah. always someone at the front of the restaurant going, hey, come in. Hey, come in, try this. I got this, and this. I got this, and this. They're not the chef. They're not right. making it. It's not their restaurant.
Right.
But they're the person who's attracting people in. They're inviting people in. They've got great jokes and a big smile and something really witty to say. And those types of things bring people into the restaurant. But actually, when they're in the restaurant, then oftentimes the server comes on over and talks to you about the depth of the menu, where it comes from, or the right. sommelier comes over and tells you where the wine's from. Sometimes the chef comes out and says, you know what, this is something that a recipe I got from my grandmother's. And actually, once we're, you know, it's that thing of we're all coming to the same meal and everyone can do, you know, a part within it and use the skills that they've been given to help someone ultimately enjoy a meal that hopefully is delicious, fulfilling, and sustaining. And if we look at it that way, then it kind of, at least for me, softens all the edges of why is that person doing that? Or how did that person get invited there? Or why is that person going to that thing? Because ultimately, you know, someone like you, you're the chef, right? Or, you know, you're taking the learnings from your grandmother's grandmother and going, you know, I'm here to do my part in the cooking. And, you know, I've empowered a lot of people around me in my community to help be of service in the restaurant. I've invited people to bring their friends into the mm-hmm. restaurant. And so part of it is, you know, if the service is just to fill someone's belly with food or chant or wisdom, then it doesn't really matter what got someone in the seat at mm-hmm. the end of the day, as long as I can be there to do my part.
Community versus opportunity. Mm. Keeps coming back. I love this. This theme is really, really strong. I think it's something that we can all, regardless of where you're coming at this, how you're listening to this, what kind of listener you are, whether you're a teacher of sort, whether you're a student, whether you're just dipping a toe and you somehow just, I don't know, stumbled upon this conversation, this point of if we can all globally somehow create this culture of community first mm-hmm. versus opportunistic go-gettership, I think that will... Yeah, that will really, it'll be a much nicer utopia to live in.
Yeah, and that's the thing, from a utopian point of view, that is the ideology.
Yeah.
The methodology to get there is so much trickier.
Of course.
Because we live in a society where scarcity is the protocol of how we exist.
Respond.
And uncertainty and achievement and success. And I think I believe it has to come from these pockets and small corners of leadership within communities to say, you know what, I don't have to be the first one that speaks. And actually, Vanessa's got something beautiful to say. Or, you know what, tonight, it's not about being good at this thing. Why don't we just try this thing?
Yeah.
And finding, because, you know, it is that thing, is the more that you become, recognized isn't the wrong word, but maybe appreciated for your offering, human nature says the ego kind of perks its head up and goes, oh, you would like Michael here? Well, mm. Michael could be here. Michael could do more. And, and then my sense of ego or uncertainty gets fulfilled because now I feel that, okay, well, I know I'm going to get an invitation. I know people laugh and smile when I say this. I know people have a calming sensibility when after this practice. But it has to, again, it comes back to that ultimate sense of how can we be of ultimate service in a way where it's about, you know, it's about the person eating, not who's cooking.
Wow. This has been a great podcast. I've really enjoyed this. I've learned actually a ton from this. This has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I always learn so much chatting to you. And it's always nice to be in a conversation that we can just, you know, just yeah. share and see where things yeah. go.
One thing I really appreciate about you, and it's something I said on the stage at Soul Circus at the end of our set together, was that I really appreciate how you weave in humility. And humility as a principle, it's not about thinking less of yourself. You know, humility isn't, you know, put yourself really low. It's about thinking about yourself less. You know, it's not thinking less of yourself. It's about thinking about yourself less. And something that I really, really admire about you is how, you know, you just weaved in moments of just kind of encouragement that you were saying, you know, Radhika and the Kirtan space, I'm just a small fish in the ocean, but you kept giving the encouragement in weaving ways. And I just kept thinking, wow, this guy's humble, like sincerely humble. You know, sometimes you meet people who are inadvertently just talking about themselves all the time. And you've got a great skill of weaving in humility into your conversation. So I really deeply appreciate that.
I appreciate you saying that. And I'd say these days it's both a combination of maybe the way I was raised and also an intentional aspect of the way I teach. I can see that. Maybe I was a middle child growing up. So I know growing up, I always felt forgotten in moments. And I think there's a lot of times when you and I both are at different events and things and we have people there supporting us, whether they're playing in the band or demoing on stage or helping people find their seat. And while they're there being of service, as humans, we cannot forget those who offer their support, not just to the room and those who are attending, but their service and support to us. Mm. And so the acknowledgement of recognizing that there's always a we in any offering, where it's anything, even me sitting in a room by myself, maybe teaching a practice on Zoom, there's a we in all of my teachers that gave me their time and just had a side conversation about anything. There's all the people in my life and my family who said, you know what, great, I'll watch the babies while you go do this thing.
Or
all the people who teach with us in different events going, you know what, actually, great, I'll help welcome people in so you can go prepare and whatever. Yeah. And there's always the we aspect in any of our teachings. And I think the moment we slip into thinking that I am that which is everything, we easily move further away from I, which is anything. And, you know, it's that nature as people, as humans, as teachers, we're simply just, you know, we're linking in from what's behind us and what's in front of us. And, you know, it's one of those like Steven Seagal movies or Van Damme movies where you're kind of holding on to the sides of two big trucks as they're moving apart. And you got to hold on to the past that's moving further away and the future that's moving further ahead, going, you know what, I'm going to do my part to hold these things together and appreciate that I'm still able to be here moving forward at some sense of ease.
Epic. Michael, with your permission, we're going to go to quickfire round.
Okay.
One word, one sentence.
I'll warn you, though, when I do quickfires, my quickfire is not that fast, but I'll do my best.
Don't worry. We want authentic answers. We don't want rehearsed and, you know.
Yeah,
so he doesn't, by the way, disclaimer, none of the guests that we do quickfire around ever see the questions. So these are going to be as authentic as they come out. Quickfire. Question number one. What's something you're curious about right now?
What's something I'm curious about right now?
Yeah.
I'd like to learn more about cooking skills.
I love that.
I'm just really curious in the kitchen right now more than anything else. You know, I love to cook, love to eat, so I'm always interested. I watch a lot of random YouTube videos about cooking things and baking things and frying things, and for me that is stealing all my curiosity these
days. I'm sure Cammy's really, really going to be overjoyed to hear that if she listens to this podcast.
Oh yeah, we have lots of cooking stuff at home.
Amazing. What's something you're personally working through at the moment?
Not having control of my daily schedule, having babies, it's a challenge, you know, and I say this with honesty, and you know this, everyone here recording knows this, I was an hour late because the day was different. We had an appointment, it went longer. I'm usually quite a punctual person. I feel really guilty messaging you saying I'm late, and I have to just let go of the need to be so prescriptive with my time, because the beautiful joy of children is there is no control with time.
I totally feel you. I know. And I think as a aspiring good father, I totally appreciate that. Mm. You know, yeah, you can't put time on loving your children. Question number three. When I say Karma Yoga School, what words come to mind?
Practice with purpose.
Question number four. Something you used to deeply value but don't value as much anymore.
Controversially, I don't value going out with friends as much right now. Mm-hmm. I don't need social interaction time because of family, because of maybe the way the world's been in the last few days. I like less quiet and more meaningful.
Yeah.
So I would much prefer spending a couple hours with you, just catching up rather than needing to go to a bar, watch a game, go out for a meal with 20 friends.
Yeah.
That for me is not as interesting.
Yeah, I think they call it JOMO, the joy of missing out.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And final question. Question number 5. If you could create one law that everyone had to follow, what would it be?
Ooh. I would love it if it was law. I think if there was a law that said every child in school was given the time and the opportunity to learn how to manage their emotional well-being, not just their intellectual success.
Wow. Wow.
And support to do that.
That'd be awesome. Maybe we should think about that,
yeah.
Going into schools. Emotional, how did you say that you wanted emotional availability and well-being for children?
Yeah. And I think too quickly within that system, we talk about the mental health of children, and that is a big conversation.
Yeah.
I think there's no space in the academic system, regardless of the country you live in. I could be an asterisk because I'm sure there's some places in the world like that where your emotional well-being is put in as just of equal merit to math, science, and everything else that goes with it.
Wow. Next time, if there is a next time we get him in for episode 2, I'd love to talk kids.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk kids. That'd be awesome. Thank you so much, Michael. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time, for coming over, despite, you know, the schedule permitting that you had to spend more time with the family. And, you know, despite that, thank you so much for still coming and still being part of this episode. It's a great privilege, and I'm feeling deeply honored and humbled that you came. Thank you.
Likewise, my friend. It's wonderful to be here, and thank you for always being a good friend.
Trying. Thank you guys all so much for listening. Really appreciate you staying in tune. I hope that there was something of value there for you. I genuinely hope that there was something that struck you that made you think maybe differently about the way in which you approach meditation, spirituality. If you're a man listening to this, maybe there was a moment for you that made you feel that it's, the space is open and welcome for you to come and be part of a yoga meditation scene. If you liked anything or anything struck you, as always, comment below, drop us your thoughts, drop us moments that struck you, drop us timestamps that people would find interesting. I really love building this community. I think it's a real, real wonderful way in which I can reach people away from singing into a microphone. So I'm deeply honored and privileged to be given this opportunity. Please feel the permission, as always, to hear this again on repeat. Feel permission to re-listen to bits that perhaps you want to implement in your life that you feel will give you a deeper understanding on some of the topics that we spoke about. And as always, stay true to your spirituality. Looking forward to seeing you somewhere in person soon. Namaste. Hari Bol. For soul's sake, for soul's sake.